I welcome you to Sri Radha Gopinath Temple. Thank you for the nice, dramatic performance. Yesterday was a day where we remember, honor, and offer our love and gratitude to Srila Jiva Goswami. With this appreciation, the devotees performed for you this drama, kind of depicting one of the pastimes of Jiva Goswami. I'd like to speak briefly about him. Srila Prabhupada quoted a Bengali proverb that when the mother wants to teach her daughter-in-law, she does so by teaching the daughter. How many here are Bengali? Do you know this proverb? The idea is, because the daughter has been living with the mother for her whole life, and there's such an intimacy between them, and the daughter-in-law is just coming to the house. So she really doesn't know exactly what to do. And she makes lots of mistakes. But to not discourage the daughter-in-law, the mother corrects the daughter, even though the daughter is doing things quite nicely. And by seeing that, the daughter-in-law learns. Now, that this is a sannyasi's commentary to this. But Srila Prabhupada uses this example to illustrate that when Krishna, or when the one God, the Supreme Absolute Truth, the cause of all causes, the ultimate object of everyone's love, wants to teach the world, especially does so through the life and example of the devotees. Krishna spoke Bhagavad Gita. It's the most important part of the Mahabharata, written by Vyasadeva. But how many people actually understand how to apply the Bhagavad Gita to their daily lives? The Gita culminates Man mana bhavamad bhakto madhyajim nam namaskuru mami vaishashi sakyam te prati jani priyoshime. Worship me and become my devotee. Offer your pranams and give your heart to me. In this way, you will come to me without fail. This is my promise. And he tells Arjuna, you are my very dear friend. Therefore, I'm making this promise to you. And what a promise. That promise gives infinite hope to everyone. It's so simple. Just by learning to remember and become a devotee of the Lord, he promises his dear friend that we will be delivered. And when the Absolute Truth makes a promise, that promise is absolute. But because in this age of Kali Yuga, even simple principles are difficult to comprehend. And so many different people with so many personal agendas have so many different interpretations of these principles. So Krishna Varnam Visakrishna Samgo Sampangasa Parashanam. Krishna descends as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, as the Bhagavat, the Mahabharata prophesies, in the role of his own devotee. That is Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He's Krishna, but he's playing the role of a devotee to teach us by his example. But especially, Radha Bhava Duti Suvalitam Nome Krishna Swarupam, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is Krishna who wanted to taste the sweetness of Radha's love and who assumed her beautiful golden complexion. Not only did he teach by his example, but especially through the example of the devotees. The devotees who were there during his lila, and the devotees who have been coming down in his parampara even to the present day. But these special Nitya Siddha Acharyas, these special empowered devotees, they were in this world, and their lives, they give us hope, direction, wisdom. And something to talk about. And that's what we're going to do today. Because we need to talk about something. So the Lord fills us with his own leelas, with his own teachings, with the stories and the histories of saints. So we always have something wonderful to talk about, something uplifting to talk about. And this is the highest, deepest truths we could ponder upon together. Otherwise, if we're not very serious to really connect our consciousness to much chitam mat kataprana bodhiyanta parasparam katyatashchamam nityam tushyanti charamanticha, to taking pleasure in talking about Krishna and giving our hearts to Krishna in this way, then by the powers of Maya, our ahankars, our false egos, will impel us to find pleasure in finding faults in others. Whether there is faults or not faults in others, we are at fault when that's what we talk about. Huh? Just the consciousness of finding faults with others without a real, practical, genuine will to uplift these people. That tendency is oftentimes worse than the faults we're talking about. And gossip. So many things to talk about in that way. So we have beautiful books and beautiful histories, wonderful dramas, just to absorb our minds in man mana bhava mat bhakto, in remembering Krishna. Jiva Goswami was born in Ramkeli, which was at that time a very royal, beautiful place, The Bengali king, Nawab Hussein Shah, had palace there. He spent much time there. Jiva Goswami's father, whose name was Sri Ballabha, and his uncles, Sakar Malik and Dabir Khas, were coming from very, very exalted Brahmin families from Karnataka. But even in exalted Brahmin families, there's difficulties. So some generations before they were born, there was a conflict between brothers, and their forefathers left Karnataka and ultimately went to Bangladesh and Bengal. And they were so powerful and so influential and so deeply good-hearted, people respected them. So the king, who was actually a plunderer, he convinced these brothers to be his prime minister and his home finance minister. Because if they were working with him, then the vast majority of the Hindu population would follow him. And they made threats. He made threats. If you don't, then I will have to persecute all these people. So they took their posts. And they did it so well. The king considered them like his own brothers. And he divided his own wealth with them. They were living in magnificent palaces with beautiful grounds. And they were devotees. They developed those grounds into replicas of Vrindavan. They had a Madan Mohan temple, and they had, even though Madan Mohan temple was originally there during the time of Vajranab, Krishna's great grandson. And they made a Radha Kund and a Shama Kund and a Kanana, Kadamba Kanana garden of Kadamba trees, so that they could just forget that they're in Ramkeli and think that they're in Vrindavan. We're trying to do that at the Eco Village so that you can forget you're in Mumbai and, or think you're in Vrindavan. In this way, it was very difficult. Their mother was praying, please, Krishna, deliver them from this abominable activity of being so wealthy and so powerful. How many people have mothers like that? But they heard about Lord Chaitanya. And because of the depth of their devotion, even though they were helping this very powerful Mughal king, who was not a nice person at all, in their hearts, they were going through the acts of doing it, but actually they were so deep and compassionate. They made assembly halls and would call devotee scholars from all over the place, and they would have conferences there. When they would speak, their hearts would melt. The wisdom, the knowledge, the devotion, the love, the compassion, and the humility. Even the least significant apparent guest that would come, they would personally welcome them with so much affection and so much respect, because that's who they were. They were seeing everyone as Krishna's children. and the way they respected and honor people actually gave those people, even if they were very distracted by material ego and material depression, whatever it may be, just because these two great souls, Dabir Das, Sakar Malik, and Sri Pallava, because they honor them, they could think, there must be something good in me. Srila Prabhupada was like that. Prabhupada saw people, the slightest thing they would do for Krishna, he saw something so beautiful in it that people would think, if he sees something good in me, there must be something good in me. If he sees the potential in me to love God, then actually I can love God. If he sees within me the potential to give up all the materialistic anartas that I'm addicted to, then I must have the power to overcome them. That's what satsang is about. Being empowered by the mercy of the great saints. Because you see, the great saints see within us what we can't see, what we may have forgotten countless lifetimes ago. We're so caught up, so entangled in all of these shallow, superficial little things that go on in our life. And because our heart is so void of any spiritual satisfaction, we take all these insignificant, foolish little things so serious. They put us in such anxiety. They make us so lusty and so angry when we don't get them. And we feel so insulted when it's not going our way. And we feel so arrogant when we do something nice. And we feel so depressed when we don't do it very well. And we feel greedy because I need more. And then when we get it, we feel very suspicious of everybody who may be trying to take it away from us. And we're so afraid of death, and we're so afraid of disease, and we're so afraid of failure, and we're so afraid of disappointing people that we're trying to please. This is all little stuff when it's on the material platform. Considering we're eternal souls traveling through millions and millions of lifetimes, ultimately, all the lifetimes we're traveling through are only meant for the purpose of realizing that we're not these bodies. We're in the world. We're not of this world. We're eternal loving servants of Krishna. We're meant to be the instruments of Krishna's love with everything we do. That's something deep. That's something real. But when we forget that, we become so caught up in all these other things. Sleepless nights, worrying about these things. In your next lifetime, you won't even remember it existed. And probably in a few years, you won't even remember it existed. But great souls, they remind us of who we really are. They can see in us the potential we have. And that gives us the courage, the faith, and the will to actually live by these principles, because we know we can. That's why association of devotees, satsang, is so important. When Srila Prabhupada asked the devotees to chant 16 malas of the Maha Mantra, first he asked them to chant 64 malas every day. That takes about 8 hours or something. He said, only 64. Haridas Thakur chanted 128 or 192. 192. And he did so many other things too. If you read his biographies, he did more than any of the rest of us are doing, who aren't even chanting rounds. Such an empowered soul. So when devotee saw how crestfallen everyone was, he said, 32 rounds. He said, all right, 16 rounds. It takes an hour and a half to 2 hours for most people. Believe me, the devotees, they didn't think they could do it. But Srila Prabhupada, not only in his words, but in his glance, in his heart, he knew, if you try with Krishna's help, you can do it. And you could even follow these regulative principles. And practically every devotee could do it. How? Because he had that confidence in us, and that empowered us. He saw something divine in us. He saw Krishna's blessings with us. And Srila Prabhupada would say, what I am giving you, you should give to others. That means it's our prime duty to give other devotees confidence, to give other devotees faith, to give other devotees an understanding of their own potential to overcome their anarthas. And that's what association of devotees is. You have heard me give the example of the redwood trees, of how they're growing so high in the presence of earthquakes and windstorms and massive snowstorms. For thousands of years, the biggest, most strongest trees in the world. And their roots underground, they're all interconnected with each other. Their unity is their strength. Those trees, the atmas, the jivas in those trees, care for each other. With our human intelligence, it may be difficult to understand the psychological state of trees. But we should know they instinctively, inherently, deeply care for each other. They may not be able to write books about it or give kathas about it, but they have some instinctive nature. Because the roots are reaching out underground looking for another root from another tree. And as soon as it finds, they wrap each other around each. The roots wrap each other around, and then they become hard like that, and nothing can break it. Even earthquakes can hardly break those bonds of the roots. Every tree in the forest is connected directly or indirectly with every other tree. That's their strength. Their roots don't even go that deep, but they're united. Prabhupada said, united we stand, divided we fall. That's satsang. That means they're giving strength to each other. Now, as humans, we don't have those kind of physical roots. It's not that, you know, from our, as we're sitting down from under where we're sitting. As I'm giving class, all these roots start coming out from under your legs and your feet and start combining with everyone else. But the same principle is there. Because we're evolved humans, it's on a subtler level. You see, human life is the subtlest of all the species. Because as things evolve, the capacity of subtlety becomes more powerful. The lower species, they have instinctive tendencies that dictate what they choose to do. But we have the power to reason. We have the power to understand philosophy. We have the power to control our minds and question, what is the purpose of life? Who am I? Why am I suffering? Where am I coming from? We can understand the science of previous lives. We can understand the spiritual world. We can understand, even right here, the pastimes of God in the spiritual world. That's quite subtle. It's quite deep. In the same way, our roots are bound to each other when we genuinely are trying to help each other from the heart. The roots of the tree is like the heart of the tree. From our heart, we care. We have compassion. And with that care and compassion, we try to empower, give hope, give faith, and bring out the best in each other. Because what we do, we inspire that. If we speak all sorts of unfavorable gossip, fault-finding, and all of that, we're actually... Is there a bird in here? That was very... Huh? It's an SMS. Does an SMS have green wings or brown wings? Is it, what type of bird is that? So, what was I saying? Huh? Ah, gossip. When we engage in those activities, we're actually inspiring others to do the same, because we all have those propensities. Bhagavad Gita says we all have a divine nature, we all have a very materialistic nature. We have a good dog and a bad dog. And according to the choices we make, we actually bring out those qualities in others around them. Just like very gross example. How many times have you seen just a peaceful situation and all of a sudden somebody gets uncontrollably, obnoxiously angry? And then in reaction to that, everybody else gets angry. Even you and me get angry. Like the person... Yes? So one person's anger can make everybody angry. And if somebody's really sweet and kind and nice, it can actually, even if we're angry, we become very nice. So our behavior actually brings the good or bad out in others. So it's our responsibility, and this is what community means, where we're all really trying to bring the best out in everyone. Now we have, if we see something that's not right, we have to address it, but it should be addressed effectively, so it lifts people up. If it's addressed in a way that it just divides people and creates argumentation and distrust, then in the name of being right, you are so wrong. In order to It's like in order to get a cockroach out of your house, you light an atomic bomb. That was a nice example. It's actually like that. We're trying to solve a problem, and there may be a problem. There may be a cockroach there. But by creating disunity, by creating conflict, by creating confusion, by creating doubt, by creating animosity, and, you know, we're putting the cockroach, may or may not leave, but in place we're putting a 100,000 cobras in our house. So how we deal with problems is as important as our ability to discern what's a problem. We shouldn't make problems worse. That means the real problem is in ourself. If we cannot be sensitive enough to do it properly, we are the problem. And it takes a sincere and humble heart to admit that and change. We should be bringing the best out in each other through our example, through our relationships. And one of the ways the Lord teaches us how to do that is through His devotees. So Rupa and Sanatan, whose names were then Dabir Khas and Sakar Malik, they just knew how to bring the best out in everyone. It was hard for the Nawab Hussein Shah. They couldn't bring the best out of him. They did. He loved them. He didn't love anybody else practically, but he loved them. But still, he didn't love anybody else hardly. He was very attached to plundering and conquering. And ultimately, because they had such sincere and devoted hearts, Krishna reveals himself by his grace. They could understand that Lord Chaitanya was their beloved Krishna. They were reading the scriptures. It was clear as anything to them that the scriptures were proclaiming Lord Chaitanya's divinity. The scriptures and their hearts. So they were writing so many letters to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. We are in such a deplorable condition doing this kind of service, but we don't know how to escape. We just want to serve you. And Lord Chaitanya, like so many sadhus, because he was in the role of a sannyasi, he never answered their letters. This is one of the things that I've taken to heart. If you've ever written to me, you know. But they were writing again and again, and they never got any answers. And finally, they got an answer. It was just one line. Just said, if a wife has another lover, she serves her husband very nicely. He's a sannyasi telling him this. But they immediately understood. This means we should do our service very carefully and just wait for Krishna's mercy. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he was on his way to Vrindavan with many millions of people following him. And he actually went he took a detour, which was not a direct route, just so that he could come to Ramkeli to meet Rupans, or Dabir Ka Sakarmik Malik and Sri Pallava. And he led incredible kirtan with so many people. And at night, when he was sitting in a quiet place, these three brothers disguised themselves and secretly went to meet the Lord. First they met Nityananda Prabhu and Thakur Haridas. And they blessed the brothers and brought them before Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. They expressed the most profound, deep humility before the Lord. And the Lord was so pleased with their sincerity, their humility. He embraced them. He put his feet on their heads and then embraced them and gave them the names Rupa Goswami, Sanatan Goswami, and Anupam. The discussion that took place, some of it is actually there for us in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. Now the Bhakti Ratnakar by Narahari Chakravarti, he explains that Jiva Goswami was just about 2 years old at the time. He was the son of Sri Ballabha, who became Anupam. He was the nephew of Rupan Sanatan Goswami. He had heard his uncles and his father talking so much about Lord Chaitanya. Just by hearing, he had such an eagerness to see the Lord. But you see, his father and uncles went secretly. So Jiva Goswami, all alone in the middle of the night, secretly followed his father and uncles. And from a little distance, he watched the interaction. He saw the prime minister, the home minister, falling down in full prostration before this sannyasi, who had such a beautiful golden complexion and long arms and lotus eyes. And he saw his father and uncles weeping and weeping and crying and speaking such words of love and humility. And he saw Lord Chaitanya embracing them and giving them names. Little baby Jiva. He gave his heart. He surrendered his heart to Lord Chaitanya. He was just so beautiful. And seeing his parents' devotion was the standard of his life from that point on. Soon after that meeting, Rupan Goswami and Sri Ballabha, or Anupam, they left Ramkeli and put all their wealth in a boat to distribute to Brahmins and Vaishnavas. And they kept some for the family and some for emergency. And Sanatan Goswami stayed back and ultimately was in prison and had to escape. And they all were going to Vrindavan to meet Lord Chaitanya because they had heard that where he's going. Rupa Goswami and Anupam met Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu at Prayag. The time of the Magh Mela. And Lord Chaitanya instructed Rupa Goswami, the Dasasvamedha Ghat, and then sent them to Vrindavan. Later he called them to Puri, and on the way in Bengal, on the banks of the Ganga, Jiva Goswami's father passed away from the world. When Jiva Goswami heard that, His father was dead, and his uncles had given up all of their incredible estates, their wealth, their power, their influence, to live as sadhus in Vrindavan. And he would hear stories about them. They were sleeping under trees on the ground. They were begging from door to door and getting just some chickpeas or some rotis maybe. He was so attracted to that life, he just wanted to follow them. But he was so young. While all the other children his age, because he was in a very wealthy society, while all the other children of his age were playing, he would make little deities of Krishna and Balaram. And that was his play. He would make clothes for them and dress them. He would make garlands and put them on. He would give them incense. He would get food and offer it to them. And then with tears in his eyes, he'd gather all his other friends and distribute prasad. He would dance for them. He would sing for them. He would play with them. In fact, he was so attached to his deities of Krishna and Balaram, when he would go to sleep at night, he would be embracing them. And one night, he had a dream. Because you see, in Ram Kali, he saw Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda giving mercy to his uncles. In the dream, he saw his deities, Krishna Balaram. Then the deities actually turned into Krishna and Balaram. Of course, they already were, but they manifested Balaram's eternal divine personality with a white complexion like a spring cloud, and Krishna with a dark complexion like a monsoon cloud. Jiva Goswami was in such ecstasy. Krishna Balaram from the spiritual world manifested in his dream to give him this darshan, and they were smiling upon him. Suddenly, they were placing their feet on his head. Suddenly, Krishna and Balaram turned into Gornitai, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Sri Nityananda. And he realized at that moment that, as Narottam Das Thakur, who was a student of Jiva Goswami, prayed, Brajendra Nandana Che Sachi Shuta Hoilo She. Balarama Hoilo Nitai. That the son of Nanda has become the son of Sachi, Lord Chaitanya. And Balaram has become Nityananda Prabhu. That dream transformed him to even greater degree. And when they disappeared, he woke up from his dream. And all he could do was cry in separation from them. And now that he knew the true identity of those little deities that he made, that he was worshiping, he was 24 hours a day immersed in their loving service. At the same time, when he began his studies, whatever he studied, he could master with such proficiency. People were amazed, whether it was logic or grammar, but he was especially attracted to scripture, and especially bhakti scriptures. He became so learned, and yet he was so gentle, so respectful to everyone, so utterly humble. And when he was alone, he would cry in separation, wanting to join his uncles in Vrindavan. He's just a small boy. And this way he grew up to his teenage years. His mother was trying in every way to make the best of him. One night, he had a dream. In the dream, he saw Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu surrounded by thousands and thousands of people dancing in ecstasy. Tears of love for Krishna flowing from his eyes, his long golden arms raised, inducing everyone to cry out the holy names of Krishna.
Hare Krishna! Hare Krishna! Krishna Krishna! Hare Hare!
Hare
Rama! Hare Rama! Rama Rama! Hare Hare!
He was there. He was in the beautiful Sankirtan of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, surrounded by all of his loving associates and thousands of others, as Lord Chaitanya was manifesting his Sankirtan Leela. And then that whole scene disappeared. Jiva Goswami woke up and started crying that it was gone. And then, by the Lord's arrangement, he fell asleep again, and the same dream happened again. And then Lord Chaitanya took Jiva Goswami aside and spoke to him. He told him to go to Vrindavan. The time was now. So Jiva Goswami told his mother that he was going to visit one of their ancestral homes. And he got on a boat and told the boatman to go to Navadvip. Now, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had already disappeared from the world by this time. His leelas had ended on the physical plane. When he went to Navadvip, he met devotees, and they brought him to the house of Srivas. And there, Srivas brought him to meet Lord Nityananda. Lord Nityananda was so happy to see Jiva Goswami. He was just a teenager. He embraced him. Nityananda Prabhu told Jiva Goswami that I have come all the way from my home in Kardaha to Navadvip only for the purpose of seeing you, because I knew you were coming. Jiva Goswami was so inspired. He was so pacified. Then Srivas Thakur, Nityananda Prabhu, brought little Jiva to the house of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. There they met Sachi Mata and Vishnupriya, the mother and the widow of Lord Chaitanya. And seeing Jiva Goswami, they were feeling so much the presence of their beloved Gaur Hari. They personally went in and cooked special prasad, offered it on the altar that Lord Chaitanya worshipped, and gave that to Jiva Goswami. What wonderful prasad that was. And after profusely blessing him, Sachi Mata and Vishnupriya, they blessed him with all the treasures of the spiritual world. Nityananda Prabhu took him on a tour of all the 9 islands of Navadvip and personally explained each place historically. This is a This is spoken of in the Bhakti Ratnakar and beautifully elaborated by Bhaktivinoda Thakur in the Navadvipa Mahatmya. Nityananda Prabhu told Jiva Goswami that you should go to Vrindavan, because Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has given Vrindavan to your family. But go first to Varanasi. Prepare yourself for your mission in Vrindavan by studying under Madhusudan Vachaspati. Jiva Goswami went to Varanasi. Madhusudan Vachaspati was a very, very close associate of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, one of the most intimate, loving associates of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Nityananda Prabhu. And he was also considered the greatest scholar of Varanasi. Jiva Goswami was so humble, respectful. He had such good character and at the same time such incredible scholarship. And when you combine the two, it's irresistible. Yes? Sometimes people are very nice, but they don't know that much. And usually when people know a lot, they become very arrogant or very, you know, careless in relationships. But Jiva Goswami was everything. He learned Vedanta, he learned Yaya, he learned all the different systems of different philosophies and mastered all of them. And Madhusudan Vachaspati was telling everyone in Varanasi, this Jiva Goswami, he is the foremost scholar. And soon his reputation spread for his loving qualities and his incredible intelligence and grasp of the scriptures and his realizations, that he was the most famous scholar of Varanasi. What a career he could have had. But that wasn't his purpose. Going to Vrindavan, there's no career. Because it was just a few babas in the forest. That's all Vrindavan really was. And some Brijvasis, and they don't care about your scholarship. They just, Brijvasis, all they care is, you know, if you love Krishna. And beyond that, on a practical level, whether you know how to milk a cow. All this Vedanta and Yaya and Vaisheshika and all that with Brijvasis. So here he was, the high seat of learning, Varanasi. He was the most famous scholar. He could have had students from all over the world. He could have had everything. But he left it all and went to, when he was 20 years old, he left it all and went to Vrindavan. And when he arrived, Rupa Goswami, Sanatan Goswami, Gopal Bhatta Goswami, Raghunath Das Goswami, Raghunath Bhatta Goswami, Lokanath Goswami, Bhugarbha Goswami, Kashishwar Pandit, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami. They were all waiting for him. And how they lovingly embraced him and welcomed him. And now here he was, sleeping under different trees every night, following in the footsteps of his uncles, begging for food. He approached Sanatan Goswami for initiation, who was his elder uncle. Sanatan Goswami, out of deep humility, told him he should take initiation from Rupa Goswami. Rupa Goswami was a disciple of Sanatan Goswami. Rupa Goswami, to please Sanatan Goswami, accepted him. But before he initiated him, he wanted to teach the world through the example of his nephew, he had Jiva Goswami do the most menial services. In Varanasi, he was the king of pundits, scholars. Now, sometimes we think, you know, dovetail a person's propensities, you know, give him some big project. Yes? I mean, what kind of project you give Jiva Goswami? Rupa Goswami told him, you know, sweep the temple, water the tulsi plants, go and get leaves and process the leaves to make them into proper paper so that I could write my books on them. He didn't tell him to write any books, to just process the leaves for I could write. And Rupa Goswami was doing some puja. You could clean the puja paraphernalia, you could wash the pots, you can prepare the puja so I could do the puja. And even though Rupa Goswami was so humble, still he wanted to give the proper consciousness to Rupa Goswami, to Jiva Goswami. So he said, and when I go to take rest, you can massage my feet. And when it's hot, you can fan me. And you could serve all the other devotees the same way. And that's how Jiva Goswami spent months and months, perhaps some years. And he was totally happy just serving. Because in bhakti, it's not what service, it's service. The spirit of seva, there's no high or low. Why did Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu choose Ishwarapuri as his initiating guru? Because he was satisfied with the most menial, apparently low service to his guru. It's the spirit. That's what Krishna sees. When Rupa Goswami saw Jiva Goswami's deep sincerity, humility, and devotion, he initiated him. And after some time, Rupa Goswami made a deity with his own hands of Radha Damodar. Rupa Goswami personally installed that deity and began the worship of the deity. Then entrusted Radha Damodar into the care of Jiva Goswami. Jiva Goswami took the service of Radha Damodar, small murti, as his life and soul. Narahari Chakravarti tells some stories. He says there are limitless leelas between Radha Damodar and Jiva Goswami. But he only tells a few. Because Jiva Goswami worshipped the Lord with such love. The Lord reciprocated. You see, Krishna, when he appears in the form of the Archamurti, he's Krishna. Krishna has inconceivable potencies. Krishna is the creator of material energy, and according to his wish to make himself accessible to us, he could appear within his own energy to give mercy and to receive love. Radha Damodar would talk to Jiva Goswami. He would say, I'm hungry, please feed me. Jiva Goswami, with so much devotion, would prepare bhoga, and he would offer it. And right in front of his eyes, Radha Damodar would eat it. Now what he saw, we're not qualified to hear the description, but he actually saw Radha Damodar eating the prasad. with these eyes, which were anointed with the salve of love. On another occasion, Jiva Goswami was doing his seva, and he heard the sweetest, most beautiful song of a flute. On the altar, Radha Damodar was playing the flute. Gopinath is playing his flute right now. But how many of us hear it? Only if he wants us to hear it can we hear it. So he heard this ambrosial, nectaring, ecstatic song. And then he heard, Jiva Goswami, come. Come and see me playing the flute. And Jiva Goswami came to the altar, and Radha Damodar was right in front of his eyes playing his flute and dancing. Jiva Goswami just wept tears of love. This is how they lived. In the drama today, there was a special little story. According to the Bhakti Ratnakar, because there are different variations of the story and different stories as well that are similar. In the Bhakti Ratnakar, it describes that Sripad Ballabhacharya, who was a very dear associate of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and these two sampradayas were so close like brothers in those days, the Gaudiya Mukt, the Gaudiya Sampradaya and the Pushti Marg. It actually, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati quotes from scriptures that Jiva Goswami would regularly go to visit Vitthalnath, the son of Sripad Ballabhacharya, as did Rupan Sanatan. They were all very close, and Raghunath Das Goswami and Vitthalnath were so deep friends. So, Sri Ballabhabhat volunteered, because he was one of the greatest scholars that ever lived, to help to edit Rupa Goswami's Bhakti Rasamrita Sindh. And Jiva Goswami pointed out to him that what he thought was not the best way of saying things, it wasn't that he defeated him. He just clarified that actually there is another way of saying it. And that what he's saying from his ras, from his bhav, it's correct. And Ballabhacharya was so happy to understand that he came back and told Rupa Goswami that this Jiva Goswami is a wonderful person, how deeply he understands your writings, and how he enlightened me to understand the depths of what you're writing. But Rupa Goswami, he wanted to teach the world through his disciple. He chastised Jiva Goswami. Ballabhabhata is an exalted senior to me and you. Why do you think you have the right to question what he has proposed? To be in Vrindavan, we cannot have any pride. You must go. Rupa Goswami knew he was simply protecting the loving relationship and the exalted position of his guru. Now, there's many lessons that could be learned by this. One is how very, very strongly the Goswamis taught us the principles of etiquette. Even though Jiva Goswami was perfect and pure in his intent, still, how to respect superiors, seniors, is a crucial, critical, inseparable principle of bhakti. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when Ramchandra Puri came, he honored him and respected him, even though he was quite a crazy man. He was blaspheming Lord Chaitanya. Lord Chaitanya, yes, 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 you are very nice. This principle. At the same time, he wanted to show, even though Rupa Jiva Goswami was humble and really didn't do anything wrong from another level, still, he was so humble that when his guru said, this is wrong, he accepted it as core of his heart. Yes, I did not act appropriately. And he went to Nandakat. And he performed great austerities. He hardly ate anything. He was just chanting the holy names to rectify himself for his false pride. Until ultimately Sanatana Goswami came there and found him and brought him back to Rupa Goswami. And Rupa Goswami, seeing the sincerity, the love, the humility of Jiva Goswami, embraced him, and personally Rupa Goswami nursed him back to health. And every day, all the six Goswamis, not every day, but on a regular basis, all the six Goswamis would meet where the Radha Damodar temple is today to discuss Krishna's pastimes, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes, to discuss Vrindavan, their mission in Vrindavan. Their mission was to write books, extract the essence of all the Vedas, prema bhakti, reveal and excavate the holy places of Krishna's lilas in Vrindavan, establish temples and discover the ancient deities that were lost, and live with principles that will set a standard for all generations. They would discuss these things. After some years, Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami both were called by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu back to the spiritual world. And all the Vaishnavas of Vrindavan, they didn't have to have any vote or anything like that. It was all the unanimous feeling of their heart that Jiva Goswami is our leader. He is the foremost authority of our sampradaya in the absence of Rupa and Sanatana. And even though so many were senior to him, Lokanath Goswami was much older. He came much to Vrindavan many years before him. He was Lord Chaitanya's personal associate, best friend. Gopal Bhatta Goswami, such scholar, such an incredible personality, who was personally serving Lord Chaitanya for 4 months in Sri Rangam. Was worshipping Radha Raman. All these devotees, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, Raghunath Das Goswami, the Prayojana Acharya of our Sampradaya, who Sri Chaitanya, who personally was the assistant of Swarup Damodar Goswami and watched with his own eyes Lord Chaitanya's leelas for decades in Puri. But they all accepted Jiva Goswami as their leader. And Jiva Goswami accepted all of them as his seniors. How does that work? Where there's devotion, these relationships are beautiful. They honored him as their leader. He honored them as their seniors. And there was perfect harmony. Long story, but Srinivas Acharya, great devotee of the Lord, he went to Puri looking for Lord Chaitanya, but Mahaprabhu had left the world. He came back to meet Gadadhar Pandit, but he had left the world. He kept being given further instructions. He was told by Lord Chaitanya to meet Gadadhar. He was told by Gadadhar in visions to go to Vrindavan to meet Rupa and Sanatan. When he was in the Vishram Ghat at Mathura, he heard from the people that Rupa and Sanatan had already left the world. So he was about to die because he just saw no point in living without these great devotees' association. But Rupa and Sanatan appeared to him when he was sleeping and said, "Go to Vrindavan, Srinivas. Take shelter and learn everything from Jiva Goswami and take initiation from Gopal Bhatta Goswami." And then Rupa and Sanatan Goswami appeared to him, and simultaneously Rupa and Sanatan appeared to Gopal Bhatta Goswami and said, "You should initiate this boy." And they appeared to Jiva Goswami and said, "You should give shelter and teachings to this boy. He'll be at Govinda's temple for the evening aarti tomorrow." Srinivas came into Vrindavan. And there's such a beautiful description that when he entered the forest of Vrindavan, all he could hear was the humming of the bees. There were no horns or cars or trucks or rickshaws honking their horns. When he entered Vrindavan, there was just a forest. The humming of the bees going from flower to flower, collecting nectar. And he heard the cawing of the peacocks and the peahens. And when he looked into the forest, he saw the peacocks and peahens dancing together. And he saw beautiful, glossy-eyed deer roaming about in the forest, eating shrubs. And he smelled the fragrance of kadamba flowers and jasmine flowers. And he saw so many limitless, beautiful trees with flowers and leaves. And from place to place, dispersed in these forests, there were little cottages where the Vaishnavas were living. Srinivasacharya, constantly immersed in remembering Radharani and Krishna, anticipating meeting his guru with such a grateful heart, went to the temple of Govinda Dev. There wasn't many pilgrims in Vrindavan at those days. It was mostly Brijbasis. And they were there for the aarti, little crowd of people. And when Srinivasacharya saw the beautiful murti of Rupa Goswami, worshipped by Kashishwar and Raghunath Bhat Goswami, Govinda Dev, originally installed by Krishna's great grandson Vajranabh almost 5,000 years ago, he was weeping. And Jiva Goswami came there and saw him and embraced him, put Srinivas's head on his lap, and brought him to his own kutir, where Radha Damodar was worshipped. gave him prasad, served him. And the next morning, Jiva Goswami brought, actually it's described that before Jiva Goswami met him, Jiva Goswami, after he had his dream, he went to Gopal Bhatta Goswami's temple. And Gopal Bhatta Goswami and Jiva Goswami, both getting these messages to take care of Srinivas, they were both crying in ecstatic love that they could do this service together in separation of their beloved gurus. In this way, they were all serving together. Gopal Bhatta Goswami initiated Srinivas, and he stayed with Jiva Goswami, who took care of him in every way and was teaching him the scriptures as he had learned from Rupa and Sanatan. Soon after that, Narottam Das Thakur came. He took initiation from Lokanath Goswami but stayed and studied under Jiva Goswami. Later on, Duki Krishna came from Orissa, and Srinivasacharya, with the blessings of the great Brijbasi saints, he bestowed titles on all these devotees. Srinivas Acharya, Narottam Das Thakur, and Duki Krishna, on behalf of Sri Radha, he gave him the name Shyamananda. And they all lived together for years. And it was Jiva Goswami, under the inspiration of Janava Devi, Nityananda's wife, that he not only trained them in all the scriptures, but he gave them all the writings of the Goswamis to bring to Bengal. And he instructed them to spread Lord Chaitanya's Sankirtan movement throughout Bengal and Orissa. Jiva Goswami, in certain ways, was the first person to really formulate with in a very, very structured way the literatures of the Goswamis in his writings. He wrote over 400,000 Sanskrit verses, which is considered the deepest, most profound and expansive and inclusive philosophy in history. And he helped these devotees to actually spread this mission of compassion. Not just remain in Vrindavan, happy with Krishna forever after. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mission is a mission of compassion. Nityananda, Lord Chaitanya, wanted this message every town, every village. And Jiva Goswami really established that principle by sending these devotees. And we know the famous story when Jiva Goswami saw them all off and arranged ox carts to take the books and arranged people to go with them. He made all the arrangements in every way and went to the border of Braj Bhumi and then gave blessings. After some time, he got news that in Banabishnupuram, all the books were stolen. And then after some time, Jiva Goswami got the news that we found the books again. And not only that, the king of Banabishnupuram and everyone in the kingdom has surrendered to Lord Chaitanya's movement and taken initiation from Srinivasacharya. So sometimes when bad news comes, we have to be patient. Sometimes bad news opens the doors for better news. Yes? If it wasn't for those books being stolen, one of the greatest, most historical events in our history would not have happened. The king who stole them, he felt so guilty about it that he gave the books back. And along with the books, he gave his heart, his life, his queen, and his entire kingdom. And how they helped all the Vaishnavas in so many incredible ways. Because even though this king was actually a dacoit, sometimes leaders could be like that. He became a humble saint, completely respectful, pure, forceful, assertive, but with such integrity and dignity and purity of heart. In this way, Jiva Goswami, he gave us such profound literatures, which even to this day, some of our greatest scholars of Sanskrit are translating for us. And he gave such an example of how to live these scriptures. And he also gave us the example through his beautiful students, followers, and himself, how we could live together as a Vaishnav community. What should be our real values? What should be our focus? We were speaking last night from Srila Prabhupada's preface to the Srimad Bhagavatam, that there's so much disagreement and so much conflict on every level within this world. And we can make so many apparent solutions. There's the symptoms of this conflict that's within our own heart and mind. It's very vulnerable relationships, pollution of the environment, physical and mental disease. Conflict, war, violence, terrorism, on every level. And we can deal with them on scientific levels, technological levels, academic levels, political levels, social levels, which have their place in life. But they don't really solve the real problem. The solution is the first little phrase of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Janmadyasyayataha, that the absolute truth is from whom everything emanates, the source of everything. That's the first aphorism of the Vedanta Sutra. If only we understand that. Sarvasya chaham hridishani vishto matasmitir jnanam apohanam cha. Krishna tells in Gita the same thing. I'm the source of all spiritual and all material worlds. Everything emanates from me. That means everyone emanates from me. Aham bija prathapita. We all have a common source. We all have a common father and mother. We are all part and parcel of the same all beautiful, all loving Krishna. We actually have something in common eternally. Everything else is superficial. when we understand the beauty of what we have in common forever, that nothing could change, then there could be real unity. The association of devotees or satsang is we all understand what we all have in common. And we all agree on it. We're trying to help other people to understand it too. And we see that in others. But we all agree on it with each other. So all the variegatedness of nature and race and caste and language and social status and academic capacity and all of these things, they're all details. The main thing is Gopi Bhartur Pada Kamala Yoda Das Das Anudas. If I'm a servant of Krishna and you're a part of Krishna, I'm your servant. Srila Prabhupada quoted Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur in this way. Every devotee is Prabhu. I am Das, Das, Anu Das. When everyone's thinking like that, do you know what happens? We live in Vaikuntha, the spiritual world. The spiritual world is not just some place that, you know, is beyond the Viraja, beyond material existence, in this Brahmajyoti floating in the sky. It's there. But you can't get there until you find it here. When we actually live in the spiritual world, right here in this world, within our hearts and within the way we live and the way we interact, we can't get to that place. Wherever the devotees are thinking, everyone is my Prabhu and I am Das. Das, Anu Das. That is Vaikuntha. That is the spiritual world. That consciousness. Golokera Premadana Harinam Sankirtana. We can actually taste the sweetness of the holy name and go back home, back to Godhead. Thank you very much.